Hello, it's Eric Radford, and you're listening to This Week in Skating.
Welcome to This Week in Skating, the weekly podcast bringing you the latest news from the world of figure skating. Here are your hosts, Daphne, Gina, and Mateo.
Our guest today is a former pair skater that competed for Canada with different partners, achieving a lot of important results that include 2 world titles and 3 Olympic medals.
Eric Radford has also participated in different shows, including Battle of the Blades, Dancing on Ice, and lately he joined the Tour Villandine Farewell Tour.
So we are excited to welcome Eric to This Week in Skating. Hi, Eric.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. So as we said in the intro, you just completed the Tour Villandine Our Last Dance Farewell Tour. Mateo got to see that show.
Yeah.
I wish I could have saw that show. It toured all over the UK and Australia. So how did that tour go? And what did it mean to be a part of such an incredible tour with, you know, the legendary Tour Villandine?
Well, when I was first asked to do the tour, I remember thinking like, this is going to be incredible, you know, and that was like a whole year before we even started rehearsals. And then, you know, when we arrived at rehearsals and started to get to know the cast, I think that we all sort of knew right away that it was going to be something incredibly special. Performing the show was so much fun. We had so many different types of styles of numbers. You know, the opening was this big Greatest Showman number, and then we had like Putting on the Ritz number. And it was really fun to kind of like, I think all of the skaters really had to draw upon a lot of different feeling and style through the show. Getting to tour with Tour Villandine was just, it was so amazing. Like, they have such an incredible legacy. They are superstars here in the UK and in Australia. And, you know, like, sometimes, you know, I think in the skating world with shows, sometimes people feel as if like it's difficult to get big audiences to come to skating shows. And every single show we did had like an incredible, like, packed audience. And, you know, that's just a testament to their career and the sort of brand that they were able to build for themselves here, which is incredible. And to be able to sort of ride their coattails and experience all that energy, you know, was an incredible honor. And then also just for me personally, you know, getting to skate with Vanessa, we had a very short career, and I've loved skating with her so much. And, you know, we had done Holiday on Ice together, and then you never know if you're going to get another opportunity to perform together. So getting this opportunity to go out and skate so many more times with Vanessa was a big highlight.
You're right. As Gina said, you know, I came to the first night of the show in Wembley, which was amazing. I did not really quite know what to expect, but it definitely exceeded my expectations. As you said, it was such a variety of, styles and different performances all together. But I think the storytelling as well was phenomenal. And yes, it really, even if you go there without knowing Tour Villandine, you would definitely know who they are after that and love them. And if you know who they are, yeah, you just end up loving them even more. It was incredible, really.
Yeah, it was a really like beautiful way, like sort of trip down memory lane, you know, and how they tied in the numbers with their, you know, their story. I thought it was very clever and effective.
And as you said, you know, you were there with Vanessa. Actually, you and Vanessa joined the cast of Dancing on Ice in the UK of season 17. Yes. So can you tell us about how did that all happen? So was it, did you get, I don't know, a call from Tour Villandine directly? How did it go?
Yeah, it just kind of came in an email. And, you know, Vanessa did it the year before as well. And they had invited me to do it then as well, but I couldn't at that time. I just had other things happening in my life and I was in a sort of a transition phase. And then, you know, the year went by and then they reached out one more time. And, you know, Vanessa, you know, she's like, I think you're really going to like it. She had a blast doing it. And I was like, yeah, you know, I think that I'm in the right like space in my life to go and to do that. But that came in at the same time we were asked to do Dancing on Ice and the tour. So that all came in like one big email, and I was like, wow, like this is so incredibly exciting. But it was so far away at that point, and I was like I hope, like I don't want to injure myself, I hope that, you know, something doesn't happen that I can't do it. And but it was good motivation to kind of keep myself in shape for all of that period of time. And then, yeah, and then, you know, before you know, as with all of these things, like they're always so far away. And then before you know it, I was on a plane over to the UK and sort of jumped right into the experience.
Yeah. So is Dancing on Ice sort of like Battle of the Blades in Canada? And you had done Battle of the Blades in Canada, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's similar. But in, you know, Battle of the Blades, it was hockey players and figure skaters. And this is celebrities. So these celebrities go from like not knowing how to skate to be able to do these pretty intricate routines. Like, it is really incredible what they're able to do. And it's just a very different dynamic, because with a hockey player, they already know how to skate, but they're learning to skate in figure skates, which can be a challenge. And they're learning to skate in a completely different way than they ever had to. But yeah, each one had its own challenges. And but each one, like, I loved. It was such a fun experience.
Well, we are starting an Olympic season. You know what it's like. You've had such a long and successful competitive career as a pair skater. So looking back on it, what would you say are the highlights for you when you look back on your career?
You know, when I look back at my three Olympic experiences, each one is like a fingerprint, you know, it took place at a particular part of my career in a particular, like, almost part or section of my life, of where I was in my own just development. And with a different theme, you know, like making it to the first one was incredible. You know, that was our goal. I would have never imagined that, you know, like medals were going to be a part of it. It was always like, I got to get there and then I'll be happy. And then that turned into, oh, we're at a second one, and now we know that we have a potential to medal here. So, oh, now I want to be able to medal. And then the third one was like, I had no plan or like forethought that I was going to ever go back to another one. So just to be back at a third one and kind of just be like, just to go there with no pressure whatsoever, but just to soak it up and to skate for myself in a completely different way than I ever had before, was incredible as well. So each one had its highlights. Of course, in Pyeongchang, like going out and having four amazing skates like that in the team event and then in the individual event, and to come away with two medals was, you know, incredible. In the first Olympics, being able to win that silver medal with my best friend and, you know, one of my biggest rivals at the time as well, Dylan Moskovich, was something that I'll never forget. And then coming back with Vanessa and getting to skate in a completely different way, in a completely different facet, for a completely different reason than before, was incredible. And to be back at an Olympics when I would have never dreamed of it was a really cool experience as well.
Actually, one of the things that we keep reflecting about is that, of course, at this Olympic cycle, there are a lot of skaters coming back like you did. So if we look at the pairs field, you know, not exactly this season, but, you know, of Minerva Hase and Nikita Vlodin, we have Diana Salato-Dudek that came back, you know, and they're all achieving quite a lot. They're all sort of, if you look at ice dance, we have Guillaume Cizeron coming back with Laurence Fournier-Baudry. So what did it take for you to come back? You already said that you had to approach things differently, but what were the challenges you had to face?
That's a really great question. I think that I actually found I was like a little scared coming back. You know, could I get back to that level? Like, it's so hard to maintain that high level of training that it takes to be able to go out there in those really high pressure moments and be able to have the comfort and the training behind you to have a good skate. And so just, you know, being like 4 years older than the last time was probably like the biggest challenge. Like, I could feel to get to that really high level of like physical conditioning, it was just more difficult. And I think that we, you know, anybody who's an athlete or has done physical exercise, like as you get older, it just becomes exponentially more difficult to get back to that very, very high and find like that very last level of like training long programs consistently for long periods of time before you go into a competition. But I think that, you know, I think that I wasn't as far away from that high level as I thought I was, because that was part of the reason that I think that Vanessa and I finally like kind of looked at one another and said, are we going to go for this? Because the, you know, like the triple twist, the throw triples, the side-by-side jumps, everything was right there. All the ingredients were still there. It was just going to be a question of putting them all together. And I think if those things didn't come together so quickly and easily, I think we may have been more hesitant to like really go for the comeback. But something that was really interesting was, because I was just skating for myself, when we initially started training together and running programs, we were skating so amazing and it was so easy. And I thought I was just going to waltz out onto the competition ice and be like, I don't care. You know, I'm going to be free of nerves and I'm just going to go and do it for myself. But of course, it didn't work like that. And I think that you could see as our season went on, like we were struggling. We were struggling to get those clean skates put out there. And I realized that there is no shortcut to be able to get to that level of consistency. You need to go out and do more and more and more and more competitions. And because we only had one season, you know, you could see at the end of the season, we were starting to get some clean programs out. And we just, it was sort of a battle with time now when I look back in hindsight. But, you know, I guess what I realize is that there is no easy way to do a competition. It doesn't matter how far removed you are yourself from, you know, like that, just trying to skate for, you know, to win. It's still, when you put in all that time in practice, you go out and you want to have a good skate because you don't want it to all be for nothing.
Well, you've been through three Olympic cycles and here we are, less than 6 months away from the 2026 Olympics. What sort of advice would you give to the athletes that are in the rut of it right now? They are trying their hardest to be the best they can be to make their respective Olympic teams. What would you say to them right now as they are going through this, these next 6 months?
I'd say two things. Keep it simple. I think that an Olympic year isn't a year to like experiment, really. I think that you begin to figure out the elements and the transitions in and out of the elements that really work for you and feel the most comfortable. And you want to have as much of that in your program as possible. And then the second thing is, would be like, just stay in your bubble. Keep it small, along with keeping it simple. Don't look at what anybody else is doing. Just when you go at competitions, like you want to just pretend that it's just another day. You know, I always thought it was funny that when you're at the Olympics, I was putting all of my energy into pretending I wasn't at the Olympics so that you can like access that comfortable feeling and kind of get into that flow once the music starts. So I think, yeah, for the teams, it's just doing your job, keeping it small, keeping it simple. And, you know, don't stray too far from that sort of core, like, bubble you create for yourself in your training. You go in, you do your job, you do the best you can, and then you get out. And I think that if you can, like, keep it small, keep it simple like that, then you're going to give yourself the best chance possible to have the best performance on the day.
That's very true. And I think, so both Jean and I are going to go to the Olympic Games in Milan as journalists, and we are very much looking forward to leave the Olympics there from a media perspective, because as you said, it's quite difficult to get in that mindset that you're just talking about. We've seen a lot of Olympic Games where the medalists are skaters that you would not expect to medal. No offense to those that I'm kind of referring to, but it's just because the mindset is so important. And even the strongest ones that we would take for granted to get to the podium might not have the best gait there because they are not in the right place mentally.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a different like rhythm to the season, where usually you're aiming to peak end of March, and here you're aiming to peak in February. So that the importance of the season kind of gets moved ahead a little bit, and you have to, you know, usually start a little earlier, be a little ahead of the game so that you can, you know, hit the peak at the right time.
Just quickly, so another thing that we wanted to ask in relation to the Olympic Games, your first retirement was after the Pyeongchang Olympic Games.
Yes.
Did you actually feel that you retired and that was the right thing when that happened? And I mean, you know, you came back and we know that, but when you retired at that stage, did you feel like it was the right thing for you to do? Or there was something inside of you saying, I still have a fire burning? And
No, at that time I was completely ready to retire. We had achieved more than we could have dreamed. I was feeling completely satisfied with my career, totally satiated. And, you know, we had a lot of cool opportunity. I think we spent all of 2018 and 19 just traveling the world, doing shows, doing seminars, doing events. And yeah, it was incredible. And I don't think Megan or I in that moment felt like we had anything else to really give or prove.
Now, when you did retire, and we've talked about you were in shows, and you have done choreography, music composition. When you retired, did you know exactly what you wanted to do? Or did you find yourself needing to take some time to figure it all out? We hear about athletes when they leave the competitive world, they don't know exactly what they want to do, whether they want to stay in the sport or not. Did you kind of have a plan on what you were going to do post-competition?
I had a plan, you know, that I wanted to pursue my music more. I was still involved in skating through the ISU with the Athletes Commission, and then eventually as the athlete rep on the council. So there was like little things happening that were keeping me busy, but that sort of ultimate next step, okay, what is my next career? I did take some time to search for that, but that moment did hit me. It did hit me where I started to wonder, okay, like what is next and who am I without skating? And you quickly realize just how small the skating world is. When you're in it, it takes up your entire field of view, and you think and you feel like you're at the very center of this world, you know? And then when you leave, you realize that, you know, if you go out on the street, like not everybody watches the Olympics even, you know, and then even fewer people are really know and are aware of the skating world and of the sport of figure skating. And you quickly are thrown into this very, very different place. And I think that it's very difficult after you've been doing something for 30 years of your life, and it's really all you know, to go out into this other sort of world where all of that is, you can't really bring a lot of it with you. You can bring your experience and what you've learned as an athlete, but you know, when it comes to getting another job, sometimes you're further behind where your friends would be who, you know, follow the typical route of going to university and then starting a career. And, you know, so here I was at a little bit after the first retirement, but then the pandemic hit, which was, I think, you know, kind of messed up everybody's trajectory, everybody's life anyway. But, you know, I felt it especially after retiring with Vanessa out of competition in 2022, because I was 37 and moving on from my sport. And so imagine all of my other friends at 37 are married with kids. They've worked their jobs for, you know, a decade, and they're at this completely different part of their life. And it made me feel like I was like a teenager, you know, I'm just stepping out into the world for the first time. And I've had this incredible experience, but when it comes to, you know, the work world, I didn't. And it can be really challenging.
Yeah, I feel like there's not a lot of resources to help athletes once they finish their competitive career. I feel like sometimes you're just kind of, okay, you're done competing and you're just thrown out there to figure it all out. And I know some athletes have struggled with that, that skating is their life, and then when skating is done, they don't know what's next. Some do balance college with skating, but some don't, and then they just don't know what to do afterwards. So I wish that maybe there were more opportunities or resources available maybe to help athletes figure out what's next.
We're actually really lucky in Canada that the Canadian Olympic Committee has a system in place called Game Plan, where they do have a lot of resources for athletes. And not every country has that. So I felt very, very lucky. But there's a whole sort of like mental, spiritual side of it too, where you ask yourself, well, who am I without this sport? Like, your identity can be so connected to it. And it actually kind of like led me to a lot of soul searching about, you know, who I am, if I'm not Eric Radford, the figure skater. And I think that there was a documentary, and I remember, I think it was like Michael Phelps and Gracie Gold were in it, The Cost of Gold, The Weight of Gold or something. And, you know, even Michael Phelps struggled with moving on from swimming because analogy that I used with my friends, like when I first retired, was coming off the Olympics and coming off my career was like coming down from like the highest mountain. And I've just got back down to, you know, base camp, and it was incredible, but I'm looking ahead at my life and in that moment, I don't see any mountains as high as this one. So I'm 37 and there's this feeling of, oh no, like nothing will ever be as amazing as this was. My best years, my best experience, all the most incredible things are behind me. And that can be really scary. That can be very depressing to feel like, oh, it's never going to be as good as it was. Of course, that changes and, you know, your life moves on and you get new perspective. And, you know, I went to therapy and that helped a lot. And I did all that sort of soul searching, and your life recalibrates, you know, it's not as you think it was. And I think that, that is a process that I think that would be natural for anybody to go through. And I think that happens not only for athletes, but people in careers, people who are retiring, maybe people who are like in school and they finally finished their PhD, or it could be, I think there's a lot of different examples of that, but it was definitely challenging. I think that it's good that there is being more awareness brought to it, that athletes need support. And I think that, you know, even for me, when I used to watch the Olympics, I was like, oh, if you win Olympic gold, you are set. Like, you're wealthy, you're going to be living in a mansion. Like, people think that there's more there than there is. But I think the reality is sometimes you get home after the Olympics and it's you and your medal. And then you're thinking, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm. I actually spoke with other athletes that won Olympic medals, and they were saying something exactly around those lines. They also said that some of them, they said that it took them a few years to actually really enjoy the medal and the victory. Was it the same for you as well?
Yeah, in a way, I actually have, it's very strange, and I've talked to some of my other like friends in skating about this, that, you know, it really wasn't until a period of time after that I finally went back and I watched some of my performances, and I think I had enough distance from the moment that I could watch it as if it was somebody else, as if it wasn't me. And I think that especially in a sport like figure skating, you become so critical of yourself, and you can watch your performance and see all the tiny little details that didn't go well or that you always wanted to be better at. And I was able to see myself as another person when I watched myself skate. And I think it was me and Megan's performance in Boston or something. And I was like, wow, like, that was so incredible. And I felt so proud of myself in a way I hadn't before, because I was just in this state of, well, it could always be better. You know, you never reach like that sort of like perfection in skating. And yeah, it was a really like beautiful moment for me to kind of really feel proud, really proud of myself for like the first time. And I know it sounds strange to say with all the success I had, but it really felt like that. And you very quickly realize that it's not the medal. And I mean, this has been said time and time and time and time and time again, that it was the journey. It was all the memories. It was the people. It was my friends that I made along the way and had all these incredible experiences with that hold the most joy. You know, every once in a while I can whip out the medal and be like, cool, you know, it's nice to have it. But yeah, it's not, it doesn't, the joy in the medal is not very long lasting. It's fleeting, you know. Of course, I have that memory of standing on the podium and singing the national anthem with my friends, and that will always be a highlight. But it really was all the little moments in between and all the support from my family and my coaches and what it really took to get there that has the most meaning.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
I was going to ask if your medals were with you in London, but, you know.
They are, yeah.
Well, after your career, you did take on a role with the ISU, and you were with the ISU Athletes Commission for a number of years. Can you talk a little bit about that role and how did you, you know, maybe be inspired to kind of get involved with the ISU?
Well, there is like a whole sort of structure to athlete commissions in all the different sports. And I wasn't even aware of that side of things until it wasn't until 2019 that I think it was a friend of mine at Skate Canada that was like, hey, like, would you ever consider doing this? And then I kind of learned about it and, you know, I ran for the position and then I got the position in 2019. And man, it was such a learning experience, completely different environment, like very like business environment and like learning, you know, the functions of the Athletes Commission, like budgeting, planning meetings, and, you know, figuring out and getting a view on the sport and what the ISU actually has to do to, you know, create a season to promote the sport, to promote the development of sport around the entire globe. It was kind of like, I think, going into the control room of a ship and being like, oh, wow, like there's so much that happens. And, you know, I remember as a skater, you know, they change the rules every year. And I was like, who's making these decisions? Like, why is this happening? And why has nobody like talked to me about it, the athletes? And I think that, you know, we were the only, the second term of the Athletes Commission for the ISU. And I think it was in the last like 10, 15 years where sports were really like starting to open up to giving athletes a voice, which sounds crazy. But for some reason, it wasn't happening. And that was, you know, kind of how I looked at it. I wanted to give the athletes a voice the same way, like, I felt I didn't have one when it came to rule changes. And, you know, so we came up with ideas of doing a post-season, like, questionnaire for athletes about how they were feeling about, you know, rule changes, formats of competitions, and starting to connect the council with the voice of the athletes more. But yeah, just overall, it was nice to kind of keep my foot in the door of the sport in a totally different way. And I liked being able to use my experience to give back, not only in a competition way, but really just as an athlete that, you know, skates under the umbrella of the ISU.
That's fantastic. It sounds a bit like basically unions for professionals.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that. Yeah.
In a way. So you're given a voice within your sector to say, hey, that's what we want. But it's great because there are athletes, of course, that are continuing to do what you're doing. I think Evan Bates might be doing something like that now. So it's incredible because you're competing, but you're also given a chance to participate within this conversation. So it's great to see that it actually makes a difference because we can only see what we see from meetings and what's published in terms of minutes from the meetings. But it's good to hear from you that are actually effective from having had an experience from the inside.
I can tell you that there are a lot of very smart and passionate people that like genuinely want this sport to be as big and the best that it can be. And I think that, part of what we can do as the Athletes Commission is reassure the athletes that that is what's happening.
Now, were other athletes going to you and sharing their concerns with you since you were on the ISU Athlete Commission?
Yeah, so I mean, that's part of the reason that we try to go to one or two events throughout the season to be sort of on the ground with the athletes. And that's kind of when the best ideas get communicated. You know, if you're just like in the athlete's lounge and an athlete will be like, hey, Eric, can I talk to you for a second? And, you know, they'll tell you about a concern they have or they need information or, you know, a lot of it comes around like rule changes and what's going to be happening in future seasons. I think that we try to open up lines of communication to the athlete because that was always the biggest barrier. What are the athletes feeling and thinking? And then getting that to the council so that they can, when they make decisions, they're making sure that they're taking into consideration what the athletes are thinking and feeling.
Have you been following the ISU lately? Because they're actually, so you know that they have a vision to bring effective change to the sport, both for athletes, but also for fans, the way fans are engaged and the way they work as an institution. But, we see a lot being published that seems to be going towards that direction and to be ensuring that they're keeping the promise that they are sharing to the world. So are you actually following the latest in relation to what they're doing there?
Yes. I mean, I was there at the sort of inception of the ISU Vision 2030. And I think when I was first presented with it and I was reading through it, I was like, wow, this is amazing. This could be really, really amazing. And I have seen them taking the steps to, like, just look at the sort of energy and sort of reformatting of how they did things at Worlds. And I know that there were some sort of purists or, you know, classicalists who are like, no, this isn't figure skating. Figure skating is supposed to be like this. But if you don't change with the rest of the world, then it will fade away. And we were all feeling that and observing that. And I think that they are taking and making the necessary changes to ensure that figure skating has a bright future.
So moving on to some other questions that are relating to your life, you recently moved to London. So could you just say how is it going there? Are you enjoying it so far? Although, you know, you've been there for Dancing on Ice already, as you said before, but yeah, how is it?
Yeah, since I arrived, I really sort of fell in love with London. I had never really been to the UK. I was here for 2 days once for a seminar and that was it. And as I, you know, I've explored London and then I've got to travel all over the UK. I really just love it. I mean, even just the way they have like tea all the time, you know, growing up as a kid, I always had tea with my parents and, you know, they go and take a break and have a cup of tea. There's just something about that culture. And I love the accents and just compared to Canada, how you can drive an hour and be in a completely different city with so much history, with a different accent, with it is just so different. You know, in Canada, you have to drive 6 hours to get to the next city. And here you can just, there's so many different places to go. The proximity to the rest of Europe is really amazing as well. You know, usually if you want to fly to a different country. It's a just much larger undertaking if you're coming from North America. And you know, they have a really wonderful skating community, and I've made so many amazing friends and connections so quickly. You know, I feel very lucky that I've kind of found a community so quickly. And yeah, so far I'm really just loving it.
Well, it was unfortunate that Matteo is in Italy right now and the two of you couldn't be together actually recording this, because Matteo lives in London. Yeah, you know, as you just said, you can go from country to country in Europe so quickly. Like, Matteo is constantly telling us he's in a different country every time we're texting him.
It's just so easy, isn't it? On average, I think it's, 2 hours to go anywhere in Europe on a flight. You know, it's so easy from London. We are connected to every single place on the planet. It's beautiful. Yeah. One thing you had to do, though, to move to London was to give away your piano.
Yeah.
I saw that you had to say goodbye to it. Do you actually have a piano here in London?
I just bought one yesterday.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I suppose it's something you cannot keep away from.
No, I've been like, yeah, that was, in all honesty, like, saying goodbye to that piano, like, I cried as if I was losing an animal almost, you know, like, it really was like a huge part of me and my heart. But I can get another one. So, yeah, it was tough to say goodbye, but I'm looking forward to, you know, starting my musical journey over here.
And there are so many opportunities over there, isn't it? Because there's just so much going on in London. And I go to a lot of classical music concerts, but they're literally everywhere, whether it's a major venue like the Barbican, the South Bank, or a local church or venue.
That's...
Maybe one day I'll just come to a concert of you performing.
That's what I'm hoping to do. I like to, I kind of look at things like where skating was the center and music was the periphery or the peripheral. And I like to switch where music becomes the center and skating is more on the periphery. And I can go and do seminars and some coaching, but I'd like to invest more of my time and energy into music to see where I can go with it, see what I can do with it, the same way I have invested myself into skating.
I don't know if I heard your story on how you got started in playing the piano and your composing. So could you share that with us?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I think it was my destiny to figure skate because it's one of the only sports that's done to music. And then I happened to, you know, start playing the piano as well, but I started doing both of them in the same year. So I was like 8 years old. I can remember, I have a very far back memory of a Fisher-Price little yellow piano and playing it when I was a little kid and like kind of experimenting with like harmonies and melodies and stuff. And my brother, who's like 5 years older than me, when he was in grade 8, my mom had bought him a little keyboard and he had this musical project and he had to like learn some music on it. And I used to like sneak into his room and I would turn it on. And I remember I taught myself When the Saints Go Marching In. And I think that, and my mom was like, "What? Like, how did you do this?" And I was like, "I want to learn to play the piano." And so she put me in lessons. And that was how it started. So I think it was, I share a birthday with Mozart. So I'm thinking there's some sort of cosmic, like I got a piece of his soul or something. I don't know what it is, but I think, yeah, I was born to be musical somehow.
Okay. And you haven't composed any programs of late or, you know, music of late for any of the skaters, have you? I know Patrick Chan, that was one of your more recent ones, but any lately?
I haven't composed anything specific where like an athlete has asked me to compose something specific, but I know that there are some athletes that will be skating to some of my music this season. I saw there was a German skater who'll be skating to my orchestral version of Storm. And I had a music website, Click and Clear, the one that kind of clears music for skaters to use. They reached out and said that they had some requests to use some of my music. And so I haven't composed anything specific, but I think that And it would be nice. And I hope that you'll be hearing some of my music out on the circuit.
That's great. And do you have any other plans for the future? So we know that as far as it goes from skating, you might be continuing to do shows, music, you're hoping to come back. Anything else?
I think we may have a couple shows lined up, just small ones. Musically, I'm just getting myself set up here, and then I need to sort of, you know, get into the process of composing again, and then seeing maybe there's some projects that come up. Maybe I'll be composing for something specific, or I'm just going to try and release some more of my own music. And yeah, just really kind of overall getting more and more settled into life over here in London.
Well, we like to, when we have time, ask some fun questions to our athletes that we have on the podcast. And these are kind of some crazy fun questions. So the first question we have is, if you were a fruit, which would you be and why?
I think I'd be, I couldn't tell you why, but I think I might be like a passion fruit. I think that...
Nice.
But that also might just be because I really like them. I like the flavor. And when I was over in Thailand for the ISU Congress, you know, passion fruit's so like exotic everywhere. But when you go over to a place like Thailand, it's everywhere. Like you can just get it in whatever drink or smoothie you want it. And oh man, that's so much passion fruit.
Okay. Right. The next one is, what's the most awkward thing you've ever done?
Awkward. Oh boy. Okay. I'll tell you, this is actually a great story that I don't think anybody really knows. There was one season where it was before Boston Worlds that season. And Megan and I were working with an acting coach just to connect more. And, you know, when I look back, it actually kind of helps you to, it deepens your self-awareness to a degree. But what she asked us to do, we were skating to your song from Moulin Rouge. And she wanted us to, like, I would sit and then Megan would lay in my arms and I would sing that song to her. You know, Megan and I, we never had that type of like relationship, you know, like, and we both are not, both Megan and I were like, no, we're not doing that. And she was like, no, you're my angels. You guys can do this. And I think literally for almost 20 to 30 minutes, we were just like, no, like pick something else. We're going to draw the line here. We don't feel comfortable. She continued to push and push and push. And we did it. And so Megan had to lay my arms and I sang to her. And then I laid in her arms and she sang to me. And it was maybe one of the most difficult and most awkward things ever. And then I remember thinking after, I was like, wow, like I did something I didn't believe I could do. You know, we both were like, we actually did it. And there was like some sort of like expansion in that, you know, but it was really at the time so unbelievably uncomfortable.
If you were an ice skate, would you be the left skate or the right skate?
Oh, that's a good, I think, yeah, landing foot, I'd be the right skate.
So the next one is a musical question. What is your go-to song?
Go-to, like just personal listening?
Yeah, guilty pleasure type of thing.
So my favorite band is Sigur Rós. I don't know if, not a whole lot of people have heard of them. They're from Iceland and they have a very particular sound that I just find inspiring, uplifting, maybe a little melancholic. And then another one of my favorite artists is Oliver Arnolds, who just writes this the most beautiful neoclassical music you've ever heard, who also happens to be from Iceland. I have all these artists that I honestly have loved them individually, and they all happen to be from Iceland. And I think that there's something there that I need to go and experience. So like on a totally unrelated question, I need to go to travel to Iceland because all my artists.
Absolutely, yeah. And you might also want to see Sigur Rós live because I saw them in London 6 years ago, yeah. I think, and they were incredible live. So yeah, if they come back, definitely do it.
Well, if a director wanted to make a movie about you, which actor would you want to portray you?
It's a great question. I don't know why I'm like I don't know why Chris Evans is coming to mind. I just feel like you could dye his hair gray, and you know, he's like pretty physical, so he might actually be able to do some of his own skating, and yeah, I'll go with that.
So you're granted 3 wishes. What would they be? And of course, it cannot be to ask for more wishes.
You know, I put a lot of thought into this. But then it's, I guess, kind of like a little bit nerdy or weird. Like, if I was going to wish to like have powers, I would wish for like molecular telekinesis, like the ability to manipulate matter. And then I would probably wish for immortality, to live as long as I choose to. And then my third wish would be that nobody could ever wish for me to lose my powers.
That's great. All right. Well, this last question has been a question we've asked every athlete that has come on the podcast for the last 4 seasons that we've had of This Week in Skating, and it's a fun one. You're stuck on a deserted island with 3 skaters, past or present. Who would you be stuck with on the island? Now, you can either just be on the island having a good time, or you need to figure out how to get off the island. Your choice.
First one, definitely Dylan Moskovich. He could definitely learn or figure out how to get off the island. He's really good at that. And he's my best friend, and we always have a great time together. Patrick Chan, who's one of my really close friends, another person who, whatever moment we've experienced together, it's always amplified just by being together. And probably Andrew Posch.
Oh, okay.
Another one of my really close friends, Dylan and Patrick, were like best men at my wedding, and Andrew basically was too. So yeah, I'd just be basically with my 3 best friends.
Very good. We asked the question to Patrick, and I can't remember what Patrick said, if he mentioned you or not, but we'll have to go back and check.
Okay, it's okay.
But you came up with that really quickly. Others have struggled with that. And you did not mention Keegan Messing. He is the most popular answer for that question, because everyone thinks because he lives in Alaska, Keegan could get everybody off the island.
That is very true, actually.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, we want to thank you for joining us today. You know, we had a great conversation with you and learning about what you've been up to since your retirement. So good luck to you as you continue to pursue what's next for you, and all the best in London. Maybe you and Matteo can meet in person at one point.
Yeah, we should go grab a pint and talk skating.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Week in Skating. Remember, you can keep up with us throughout the week by visiting our website at www.thisweekinskating.com. Connect with us on social media for additional updates. You can find us on Twitter at This Week in Skating without the E's, or Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at This Week in Skating. You got a burning question or feedback for Gina, Daphne, or Matteo? Reach out to us via social media or drop us an email at thisweekinskating@gmail.com. And if you're really enjoying the show and want to support us further, consider joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/thisweekinskating. Until next time, have a nice week.